You are listening to Fanther Tracks.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Wolcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to episode 54 of Making Tracks, brought to you by the fine folk over at fanfortracks.com. My name's Mark Mulcaster, and as always, I am joined by a man who has a snarky temperament of 000. He is as motivated as R5-D4, and he has the legs of L337, Mr. Mark Newbold.
Blimey, that's an intro and a half. Well done. Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm good, man. Yeah, I'm all good. Yeah, how are you? How's your week in Star Wars been?
It's been very good. It's been busy. I think after that intro, I need some WD-40, though. Loads going on, loads to talk about. I think we've got more to talk about in this episode than we have had for a long, long while.
In fairness, I think that's your fault, because you did say after we finished recording last week, oh, you know, next week will be quiet. We won't have much to talk about, so we could get in a couple of listeners' questions. Well, that's not going to happen, I don't think.
Not today. Thankfully, no. The awesome listener's question that I referred to last week is not time critical, so we can come back to that one at a later point. But yes, we will get to that ASAP. Yeah, loads of news. So much has come out. And it doesn't seem to be slowing down all of a sudden. We're sort of racing towards the next batch of Star Wars news. So, what should we talk about first?
Shall we get the housekeeping out of the way, as it were? Shall we talk about where you can now find Making Tracks?
That sounds like a plan. Fanther Tracks Radio is now available on Amazon Music Podcasts. So during the week, they launched their new podcast area of Amazon Music, and Fanther Tracks is in there. So if you want to find us on Amazon, as well as in a plethora of other places, that's the place you should go. So head to Amazon Music, search for Fanther Tracks Radio, and listen to your favourite podcast on there.
Mandalorian Season 2 trailer dropped, and it kind of came out of nowhere a little bit. I don't think anybody had any inkling that it was landing when it did, which kind of was quite nice, I think.
Yeah, I mean, certainly people have been clamouring for it for a long time. And I don't know, there's two trains of thought in respect to trailers. Part of me didn't want one. I sort of almost wanted to wait till the 30th and just have it all fresh. But then there's got to be a trailer, and there must have been a crazy amount of hits on it, because it is one of those stop, freeze frame, what's that, who's that, where's that, you know. It certainly got people talking. There's lots of little hints to certain things in there. I think also there's a hell of a lot of misdirection, intentional misdirection of what's in there. What did you think about it first viewing? Did it work for you?
Yeah, I guess really I can understand why they wanted to put a trailer out, because it's the flagship of the Disney Plus streaming service at the moment.
Very true.
This is probably the most hotly anticipated Star Wars product since probably The Force Awakens.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with that. Yeah. Because, I mean, Season 1 came out the blue, didn't it, really, to many people?
Yeah, exactly. And I think where they had the low expectations on their side for Season 1, Season 2, everybody's looking at it and everybody is going to be kind of picking this over and dissecting it in a number of different ways. So overall, yeah, the trailer, I think, is quite nice, because what it kind of does is it kind of acts as a bit of a recap to, like, where I guess we're going to see the Mandalorian pick up his quest to find the Jedi, trying to find someone to, I guess, take Baby Yoda off of his hands. There's some nice teases, and it's, you know, it's interesting. Could the ice planet be Ilum? Is that Waterworld Mon Cala? There's a lot of Quarren on there by the looks of things, so it's a good educated guess. But as you say, it could be a misdirect. We don't know. I mean, it's not like they haven't done misdirects in the past for trailers.
True. And another thing that was picked up on was the scene with Mando in the sort of the back corridors, the back alleys, and there's lots of graffiti on the wall. So obviously everyone's jumping to the understandable conclusion that the shot you see of Sasha Banks with the hood up and following on from a scene with graffiti on the walls, everyone's putting two and two together, assuming it's Sabine. I'm not so sure, personally. I don't know if it is.
Who do you think it is?
I think it's a brand new character. I don't think that character's anything to do with anyone.
Okay, that's a fair point. When you look at tying the voiceover, which is done by the armourer from the previous season, that shot of Sasha lands when she mentions a Jedi. A lot of people are, maybe it's Ahsoka, but obviously, unless Ahsoka's in some kind of like real heavy makeup and she's been been able to hide the Montrells, I don't think it's likely to be her. And also with Sasha Banks, I don't think Sasha Banks would play that. We've heard rumours are Rosario Dawson's meant to play Ahsoka. I wonder, based on previous things that Dave Filoni said, I wonder if it's Barisophy.
That's possible.
Obviously, she doesn't have the kind of like the face markings that her character does, but that could be easily covered up. And it's just because I can remember reading, I think it was at the beginning of this year, there's an article on the web somewhere which asked the question, what was the fate of Barisophy? And they quoted Dave Filoni for saying that, you know, he didn't want her to end up caught up in Order 66. He had other plans for her. And so I'm thinking, because of, you know, obviously the hood is very similar to what she wore in the films and stuff, it might be her. Or it could be a different character.
Yeah, I think you know, the scene where you see Mando and Baby Yoda look, or the child, sorry, should I say the child, look over, and the way it's edited is to make it look as if they're looking at her.
Yeah, but she's not there.
Yeah, I think they're two completely unconnected scenes. I'm just thinking logically, she's a former women's champion, she's a professional wrestler, you've just seen a sequence with two Gamorrean guards going at it with axes in a ring.
Exactly.
My head tells me she's probably more than likely in that scene. That's her scene. They'll get a professional wrestler in. I know in scenes in season one, they approached WWE and ended up using somebody different. It's a good PR move to connect the two companies, because WWE will promote it. Then it doesn't hurt Disney having her in, because she's got a very high profile and millions of followers on social media. And it gets people talking. You know, she had that nice little interchange with Gina Carano online a few weeks back, and they know each other. You know, they know each other from way back when. So I think they've trained together. So there's connections there. So it's a smart bit of business, and it gets everybody talking. You know, we're one of many pods talking about this exact subject, aren't we?
And for all we know, this could like line up a nice match between Gina and Sasha in like the next WrestleMania. Because we've seen this before with WWE. You know, the heat starts on social media these days if it's with like celebrities and stuff. So my left field, Jason Barioffy, but my kind of slightly more educated guess, it could be Sabine. From the physicality that we saw of Sabine in Rebels, you know, I think you would need either somebody who's very well versed in acrobatics, maybe parkour and stunts to play that role, or you get somebody who is able to have the slightly more on-screen presence, can still perform and probably be able to do a certain amount of their own stunts and stuff like that, you know. So
it'd be interesting to see how they do the, if they do bring Rebels characters in, which I hope they do, you know, I really hope they do. I mean, we're going to talk about Squadrons later, but you know, you see Hera in Squadrons, and we hear her in all the audiobooks, you know.
Yeah.
Hera in all the audiobooks, terrible. But you know, so a live action Hera kind of makes sense, because we know she became a general. We heard her voice in Rogue One, and she's pretty high up in the chain, isn't she? You know, that she's progressed, so you kind of expect to see her.
Well, Hera, exactly. I mean, and you know, we see the ghost at the Battle of Exegol, so whether or not it's her flying it, or if it's Jason or Ezra, or you know, just some random girl, who knows? I don't think you need to work too hard, kind of force people who maybe haven't seen Rebels to kind of go, oh well, you know, you've got to go back and watch Rebels. Because to be honest, the two kind of series can be completely disconnected like that. As long as the character is roughly kind of the same, there's going to be a translation difference between animated and live action anyway. Yeah. And well, also, like from the kind of like the kids demographic to a more adult demographic, the character would change and evolve. I guess what you do is, you use that as a gateway to say, well, hey, if you want to learn more about this character, check out Rebels or check out the Clone Wars.
It's weird with the Rebels characters, like I was saying, you know, Sabine in the show bounced around like Spider-Man. I mean, she was literally like a
superhero. She was all over a place.
So to translate that to live action, they're both canon, but it's the format of delivery, isn't it? We've talked about this before, you know, showing it as an animated show on Disney Plus or Disney XD as it was, or wherever it gets seen, and then translating it to live action, can't expect her to be leaping around like she was in the cartoon, because that's almost like a hyper-realised version of what was actually happening, a bit like the audiobooks. You know, we talked about the audiobooks. I've just finished, I think we both finished Thrawn Ascendancy,
and
Mark Thompson is brilliant with the voices, so he'll do the Jack Nicholson voice, and he'll do the, you know, he'll do all these different voices, and it's like that, I don't think that's actually what the characters sound like, but he's using the accent to give you more information about the character. And animation, even though it's canon, of course, and it's all what happens in a cartoon happens in inverted commas real life to these characters, it's almost like a stylized version of what happened. You're seeing an artist's impression almost, but it's actually what happened. You know, she's jumping that extra 6 foot and she's running that extra 5 miles an hour faster, and it's just that little stylized tweak, but it's what happened, you know. So I think to translate to that to live action could be really interesting, but I don't think that's Sabine.
Well, we don't have too long to wait, do we?
No, we don't.
So what about you? Was there anything else that was really standout in that trailer?
Gamorrean guard scene, I'm really looking forward to seeing that, those two guys in the ring going at it. That looked interesting.
They've gone on a diet, haven't they? It looks like they've really kind of slimmed down a bit and really kind of hit the weights.
Makes you wonder what Jabba was feeding them though, doesn't it? I mean, generally, whenever we've seen a Gamorrean, they've been pretty hefty. But that being said, wasn't until Rogue One, I think, that you'd only ever seen green Rodians, and then all of a sudden you see a brown one.
Yeah.
So there's this constant tweak in a good way, in a very good way, giving you a different angle of on Rodia. Now we know there's brown Rodians and green Rodians and different colours, probably from different parts of the globe. But also, yeah, with Gamorreans, generally you've only even in, you know, EU and other canon, they've always been big, bulky. But yeah, like I say, like anything, if they're not eating, I mean, they could be slaves, those Gamorrean fighters, so they're maybe not eating what they should be. Who knows? We're going to find out soon enough. Just the general tone of the trailer, even the music. It's Emmy Day today as we record this. Mandalorian's done really, really well. Ludwig Göransson's music feels like it's changing up a little bit for season two. If that trailer is anything to go by, it just felt a little bit different. So that's something else to look forward to as well. So yeah, just it was the general tone that worked for me. It's like, yeah, we're still in the grimy, gritty outskirts of the galaxy like we were in season one. The bit on the boat, the water planet, that looks interesting. We saw the pictures from Entertainment Weekly, you know, the desert. So we know they're back on Tatooine at some point. Yeah, the directors have all been announced, and that's a good spread of talent there as well. So yeah, it's just the general tone of it. It's like, yeah, it doesn't feel like it's going to move too far away from season one, which clearly has worked brilliantly.
I thought the music, that very tribal Mongolian throat singing, do you think that was Ilum, or do we think that was just a different planet and everybody's just jumping to the conclusion because the voiceover about the armourer saying about finding a Jedi, everybody's kind of going, well, could season two be the Mando basically hitting all these Jedi locales? And then we kind of get like almost the greatest hits of a Jedi Order. It's a bit like Jedi Fallen Order, where you kind of go to these different planets.
It would make sense. It'd be cool to see these places. I mean, of course, Ilum, we saw Ilum in the original run of the Clone Wars. We saw Ilum, obviously, in The Force Awakens, because Ilum was Starkiller Base. So there's a nice connection there. Again, I'm not 1,000,000% sure that it is. I think when season one trailer came out, about a year ago, you know, and you saw what we now know is Navarro, and people were like, is it Tatooine? Exactly, you know. And then we did go to Tatooine, which was awesome, and obviously we're going back again. You know, when we saw the opening of chapter one, I should say, of Mandalorian, and he's on that icy planet, and people were like, is that Hoth? You know, so you're going to assume if you see trees, you're going to think it's Endor. If you see deserts, you'll think it's Tatooine or Jakku. If you see ice, you're going to think Hoth or Ilum. If you see a mountainous place now, people will go, is that Vandor? You know, you're just going to assume, and because we've seen water, everyone was initially, when that picture leaked, the Disney Plus screen saver picture leaked last week, and people were like, they're going back to Kamino. And now we've seen it, like, actually, no, maybe it is Mon Cala. But there's other water worlds in the galaxy. So, you know, it could be, hopefully, it's a new place. We're going to explore something new. But I think that's why, for me, the only episode that didn't get nominated for an Emmy was episode 5, The Gunslinger, which was on Tatooine. I got such a kick out of that because we were on Tatooine, and as kids, you know, Tatooine was the central location of the original trilogy. It was a key location in the prequel trilogy, and you see it in the sequel trilogy at the very end of Rise of Skywalker. So Tatooine is hugely important. So you're always going to get a kick about exploring that and, you know, and seeing more about what's going on. I don't know. I'm very open. I just like the fact that Mandalorian season one was so much its own thing, and it kind of reminded me of the Brian Daley books, where they were limited about what they could talk about, so he had to go off and create brand new stuff. And it's almost like this was almost the same. It's like, let's go and do something completely different. You know, Star Wars story and the Skywalker saga, it's like the backdrop, because that's galactic history, but let's go and tell our own story. And that's why season one worked so well, because it couldn't be more Star Wars, but it was pretty much all new Star Wars. Mando obviously reminds you of Boba Fett. We'll get to that in a minute. You know, IG-11 reminds you of IG-88. There's all the waypoints that remind you very much of classic, especially Empire, that iconography, much like the sequel trilogy kept the silhouette of the TIE Fighter, silhouette of the Star Destroyer, silhouette of the X-Wing, silhouette of the Death Star in the Starkiller Base. So you're familiar and you're grounded in Star Wars, but it changes certain things up. This did the same. So it feels to me like season two, unless there's some real shock horror moments coming around the corner. And I can't wait, because on Fantha we'll be doing a weekly review of the episodes. We'll definitely be talking about it, you and me, on here. You know,
absolutely,
there's going to be so much to dig into. It's going to be fantastic.
This is Steve Bloom, voice of Zebra Helios, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks. Caravast. May the force be with you.
Do you think that from that trailer we've basically seen the first couple of chapters of a season, or do you think that we've seen bits from each of the episodes? And furthermore, if this season is mainly going to be based around Amanda now trying to find somewhere to hand Baby Yoda over, is this the point where we could potentially start to hear talk, be it only in passing, of maybe a Jedi Knight called Luke Skywalker who blew up the Death Star? Because surely at this point, there aren't that many Jedi now that we know of.
That's very true. In relation to how much of the season we've seen, I think it's going to be a little bit like Jurassic World, where the trailer was like the first half an hour, but you didn't see anything from beyond that. So they're only going to sort of show you so much. And I would imagine this trailer was probably put to bed a while ago. But by the same token, if we really get deep into it and there's lots to digest, which there will be, but you know, if there's stuff that's going to give too much away, then they're going to want to play it safe in that trailer. And you're right, I mean, me saying about did we need a trailer, of course we need a trailer, because I'm talking as a sort of a privileged Star Wars fan that knows what he wants and knows what's coming. The general television watching public will subscribe to Disney Plus on the strength of a trailer like this, so of course you need a trailer. Yeah, you're probably right. I think it probably is just the first couple of episodes. In relation to Luke Skywalker, we're what, 5 or 6 years after Jedi. We've seen the sequel trilogy, so we know that that entire thread wasn't put to bed, but the galaxy at this point probably thinks it is, that the Emperor's gone, that the Empire is on its uppers. I'm listening to Alphabet Squadron, which is sort of that sort of era post-Jedi, and it's a bit of a mess, but there's still a threat. So the galaxy's a bit all over the place. In relation to Luke, when you get to the sequel trilogy era and they start talking about Luke Skywalker and Jedi Knights, it seems incredible to me that the whole galaxy seems to have forgotten that there were the Jedi. So it's like us sitting here in 2020 talking about 1990, like the Berlin Wall coming down, as if to go, did you know there was a wall in Germany and it fell? And you know, when we talk about history like it was a myth, but we're not talking about the Egyptians and the Pharaohs and the Incas and stuff like that, or the Dark Ages when most history was wiped out and a lot of stuff was lost. We're talking about 20, 30 years before. So you talk to the era of the Clone Wars, when there was still, you know, Attack of the Clones was still 10,000 Jedi around the galaxy. Okay, that's not a big number when you think there's trillions of people in the galaxy, but there's been a republic tied in with the history of the Jedi for millennia, for like 25,000 years. Understandably, on the Outer Rim, they're almost like finding a lost tribe in the Amazon. Why would they know what's going on? You'd have an alien land on Earth and go, well, that tribe in the Amazon, how can they not know what's going on in Switzerland or Russia or whatever? They're completely isolated, but they're all living in the same sort of space. So there's these weird little enclaves of people who you would understand wouldn't know what was going on widely. But generally, it seems that the history of the Jedi has been completely wiped out. I find that odd in the sense, and I put it on Twitter the other day, I said, oh, Dr. Aphra can walk into any bar and everybody knows who she is, but nobody remembers the Jedi from 30 years before. You know what I mean? It's like this: the Clone Wars happened, and the propaganda is, obviously it's a machine. I'd say the Imperial machine was equally in terms of propaganda as it was in war. You can win wars with words, and that's what the Empire did to a large degree. Luke, I think, if they did, you know, I've seen people talking about, oh, Sebastian, you know, whatever site said it, oh, Sebastian Stan's film scenes for season 2 as the younger Luke. Okay, if they could do that and they could do a bit of sort of deep fake and make it look a bit more like Hamill and whatever they need to do, and they do it and everybody's happy, then I'm all up for that. It'd be kind of cool. The armour quite clearly gives Mando some sort of, not specific direction, but kind of sort of saying, you know, you need to lead this kid back to his people. And that was one of those Lucas areas where we don't go there. We don't go to Yoda's homeworld. There aren't any other Yodas. I wonder whether Lucas and Filoni ever sat down and had the conversation of, you know, George, at some point we're going to have to address this. And George has finally gone, well, you know, I'm not running it anymore. So this is what I said. These were my notes. This is what I was thinking.
This is what I think.
Go for it, yeah.
One of the questions is that when the armor is given the mandate of the Mando, is she talking about you need to find a Jedi, or is it that you need to find this child's species, but its home planet? Because it could be one or the other, especially obviously with the Jedi taking the young at such a young age. It could mean the Jedi like that, or maybe it's that whole thing that actually in new canon, for the notion of what a Jedi is actually comes from Yoda's species. Like, mm-hmm. they were technically the first Jedi, shall we say. And, you know, potentially there's that whole thing. They could find the planet and it could be completely obliterated. They could find seeds that the Empire knew where it was and just completely just wiped it out. Or even earlier than that, it could have happened 200 or 300 or, you know, 500 years in the past.
Well, I wonder, that's a really good point, because you kind of think, I'm thinking Attack of the Clones, when Obi-Wan, thanks to Dexter, kind of figures out where Kamino is and all that. There's the map and the planets are affected by the gravity, but there's no star, so what's happened? And they figure out there's a planet there, but it's been taken off the records. I just wonder, maybe High Republic, mm-hmm. that could expand. Yeah. We've got Yoda in there looking very different, but it's still Yoda. You know, and you just think, you know, was there a scenario where Yoda had to protect his people? Did Yoda make that homeworld disappear off the map? Are they such an endangered species that there really are only a few? Because they live a long time.
Yeah.
Baby Yoda's 50. Yoda was 900 when he died in Jedi. And still kind of, if you think, he only physically died. Yoda's still about in, you know, Last Jedi, he's whacking Luke on the head with a stick. So the end isn't the end, is it? But I just wonder whether or not there's an aspect of that. There's something to protect. And Kamino wasn't the only world taken off the maps, was it? It was an unusual thing, but how many stars in the galaxy?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure there's been other people in the past who have removed planets or whole systems,
yeah.
just to either protect them or just protect themselves from other people. As it happens, you know, Yoda and the Jedi aren't the only kind of myths and legends, really, that we're going to start to possibly have answers to with Mandalorian Season 2, because the whole fate of Boba Fett is potentially now going to be answered, is it not?
It very much feels like the stars are aligning for that to finally happen. And you're definitely alluding to the post we put on Fantha via Boba Fett fan club that showed that the agency who are in charge of Temuera Morrison's career posted on his CV that he was a part of Mandalorian Season 2 and specifically said Boba Fett. So it's pretty much been completely... I mean... how do you say it? Somebody's made a cock up somewhere. This is on the level of not putting the score for Solo forward for an Oscar, in my view. And it's out there, so we've posted it. And yeah, it looks like he's back as Boba Fett. As we said in the piece, you know, whether that's physically playing Fett, the voice of Fett, whether or not it's a flashback scene, or whether it's contemporary and happening at the same time as everything else, we don't know that. But yeah, whichever way you cut it, it's looking... Unless somebody's playing a prank, unless, you know, something has very oddly happened, it looks like he is back for Season 2. So given that you're a guy who occasionally walks around in Boba Fett armour, mm-hmm. are you excited for the return of Fett in the midst of this story? Do you think it'll be a flashback? What do you think?
I didn't really give it much thought, if I'm honest. So, yeah, it's on IMDb, which we know is a bit like Wikipedia. It's kind of like a crowdsourced kind of thing, with the exception... But when you add a credit to a production, it normally has to get approved. You know, you can't just add something and then it just stays up there. You kind of make a change, and I think like somebody in the production has to kind of approve that change and stuff like that. So that's where it becomes a bit interesting. And apparently he's credited for the first chapter of Season 2. That is interesting and means we won't have to wait very long, hopefully, to see. But given how The Mandalorian has used flashbacks in the past, I wouldn't be surprised if it was a flashback.
Mm.
I kind of think that is possibly, at least to begin with, the easiest and probably the most convenient way of getting Boba Fett in without really having to kind of spend a huge ton of time with exposition, because we don't necessarily know how far in the past that is. It could be that it's Fett that somehow trained Din Djarin as, you know, in his Mandalorian skills.
Yeah.
Which would be kind of interesting. I'm excited. I'm also excited to see what version of the armor they go with. Do they go with like Return of Jedi, or do they go back to The Empire Strikes Back, which is my personal favorite? Or do they just do something completely different? Yeah, maybe it's a new different armor and they don't necessarily name him outright as Boba Fett, but it's kind of left for the viewers to make their mind up. You know, so I'm interested. What's your thoughts? What do you reckon?
Yeah, I'd love to see Fett come back, because obviously he was so... And people say it as a dig, but I almost see it as a positive in that you didn't see him in action that much in the original trilogy. His legend built up through books and comics, but also his legend built up through reputation. And so the fact that he doesn't have to get into it that much in the films, I think says more for his skills and reputation, because people are like, I ain't messing with him. So that never bothered me. But also, and we saw Django do plenty in, especially, obviously in Attack of the Clones. He wasn't coming back for Revenge of the Sith, that was for sure. But, you know, Boba comes back. Obviously, if they do flashback scenes, you may see how he got out of the Sarlacc, which would be fantastic, because that takes you back to, like Rise of Skywalker took you back to sort of Jedi era with Luke and Leia training. They've gone back to that sort of era. You know, and then live action sequences from the Clone Wars in Mandalorian season one, flashbacks. So if they go back to Jedi, and even if they see him getting out of the Sarlacc pit, which is presumably what they're going to do, that's pretty much after you've watched the Falcon and the X-Wing fly off, and presumably fairly soon after, otherwise he would just suffocate and die. He's going to figure a way out. That would be amazing. You know, with the armor, does it come back and is it the same paint job? Because there's obviously it's quite acidic inside the Sarlacc because it's digesting them. So, you know, does it score the paint off? Does he come back looking a complete wreck? Does he come back looking slightly different? What's his MO? Does he want to come back as Boba Fett? Does he want to look the same? And also, I think people are thinking that if Boba comes back, he'll be an adversary. Maybe he'll come back as an ally. Maybe, like you say, he trains Din to a certain degree, although I think Din's fairly, you know, he's Pedro Pascal's in his 40s, so I don't see Din as being somebody that's kind of new to this. He's got his reputation already at the start of season one. He's, you know, he's already a known entity. So I think he's probably, maybe you'll see pre-Empire with Boba Fett. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah.
The options are really are wide open. And it could put more flesh on the bone to Fett's relationship to the rest of the Mandalorians, because that is a constantly evolving scenario of what they are. Now they're a culture. Now they're, you don't have to be born on Mandalore to be a Mandalorian. It's become like a culture thing, hasn't it? It's beyond what it was before.
Yeah, it's a way of life, isn't it? It's an ethos.
Back
yeah.
in the day, all the stuff about Fett back in the 80s and through to the 90s, Fett, Mandalorian, Mandalore, Bantha Skull, you know, Mythosaur, all that stuff, it was all Boba Fett. So it'll be very interesting to see how they play it. And I think with Jedi, you know, yeah, it was a lousy way to go out in Jedi. I just think everybody has a bad day, you know, and that was Fett's bad day, you know. And like, you know, like we all thought the Emperor was dead when he went down the shaft. We all thought the Battle of Endor was the end of the Empire, and we now know it wasn't for either. You know, when Darth Maul can get chopped in half and fall down the lift shaft, why assume Boba Fett died when his backpack failed and he fell into a Sarlacc pit? You know, it's not like it was chewing him up. He went down a great big wide open hole. It's quite feasible to think that he got out. Not like in the Marvel comics when the Sandcrawler falls in the Sarlacc pit, but still, you know, it's quite feasible to think that he would have escaped. So yeah, I'm all up for it. I think it's going to be phenomenal if they do that.
No one's ever truly gone, as we keep on finding out in the Star Wars universe.
I'm Gareth Edwards, and you're listening to Fanthatrax Radio.
One suggestion is Filoni and Favreau have talked about how this series might see a slight divergence from just a core Mandalorian story. Could that be a way that they do that? So, you know, we have some kind of reveal of Boba Fett in chapter one, but then in, like, say, chapter four or five, we have almost a Boba Fett-centric episode where it is purely all flashback, and we find out how he got out. Did he make a new jetpack? Like I think he did, and was it Dark Empire 2 or something like that? Or like, as it was kind of hinted in the new canon, but, you know, somebody else has basically nabbed his armor. So who knows? Yeah. We'll see. It's only weeks and a matter of days, and then we'll be sat here and we'll know everything, and we can kind of look back on this episode and decide how right or wrong we were. So the big question obviously is going to be, will Mandalorian season 2 hold up to expectations? And also, will it have as many nominations in the Emmys as season 1? Because it had 50 nominations, and it's had a number of wins, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been incredibly well received. But as we speak at the moment, it's actually won 7. So last night, Ludvig Göransson won the Emmy for the best score, and it also won for best stunts as well, which is something that the Oscars really needs to get busy with and put in a stunt category. It's ridiculous that it hasn't. But previously, in the middle of the week, it won also for outstanding sound editing, outstanding production design, outstanding sound mixing, lots of outstanding here, outstanding visual effects, special visual effects, outstanding cinematography, which is a great one to win. And it's still up for more. So I made the point on the site on Fantha that when you look back at the original, The New Hope, that was nominated for 10 Oscars and won 6 of them, plus a Special Achievement Award for Ben Burtt. Mandalorian was nominated for 15 Emmys. Of course, there's more Emmys to win than Oscars, but was nominated for 15 and has already won 7. What do you think to that? Just briefly, that this new venture, this new live-action venture, and of course, there's been live-action Star Wars before, obviously Ewoks and the Holiday Special, let's not forget that. But this show to come out, do what it's done, and not only nail it so well from every conceivable angle, but to get the nod from the Emmys like this, in the way that the Oscars now seem to just completely ignore Star Wars in terms of music, in terms of visual effects. Star Wars just didn't seem to get a sniff anymore, whereas the original trilogy, it won so many. What do you think? Do you think it's obviously a good tick in the box, isn't it?
Oh, it's a massive tick in the box, which is great. And congratulations and well done to everybody involved. It's definitely a matter of big American awards. There's politics and behind the scenes stuff going on. I just wonder if Star Wars films just now, in the eyes of the Academy anyway, but deals with the Oscars, if they're just now seen as another Star Wars film. And I suppose for theatrical movies, the level of effects, especially in recent years, it's very hard to pull out one standout CG moment, a new thing. All the Marvel films and DC and plus everything else that uses effects-orientated production start to kind of almost blend and blur together. For TV, this is really a groundbreaking kind of moment. It's a watershed moment, I think, in television production, or shall we say cinematic production for the smaller screen, because The Mandalorian isn't just a TV show. The cinematography is outstanding in the first season, and from what we saw of season 2's trailer, it looks outstanding again. So it's good that actually now Star Wars is getting the recognition, and let's just see what happens with the next season. I mean, you sometimes do see this where like a show has a really good strong first season and it picks up all the awards, but then is that repeated for the next couple of seasons, or do they get the outstanding achievements for sound and for editing and all that stuff, but then how high up is that bar set, and can they surpass that to then continue with their success for subsequent seasons?
I very much agree. It's the lore, or the allure of the new, isn't it? It's stagecraft has come out of other technologies but formulated together and come together to make The Mandalorian a possibility. And like you just said it so well, there's no demarcation line now between cinema and television. It's essentially the same. When Lucas was making the Clone Wars animated series and he decided, let's get this out at the cinema, and they stitched, you know, the first 3 episodes together and did a few edits and tweaks and changes and made it into a movie, get it out there and hype it. That was one thing. But this, you know, if Lucasfilm had said, you know, we've decided we're going to put the first 2 episodes in The Mandalorian. I mean, it wouldn't have worked doing it like that. You couldn't have had the first episode and then the second one with the sandcrawler. It wouldn't have worked as a film, but you know what I'm getting at.
No.
If they'd have made some kind of...
You could probably do the first 3 chapters, but then even that would be quite a short film. It'd be interesting to bolt chapters 1, 2, and 3 and then 7 and 8 together to see how that actually would work as a single standalone film. Sorry, I digress and
it's fine. In terms of quality, visual quality, all those technical elements, let's say, it would have worked on the big screen. That the definition and the quality is clearly more than up for it, for putting it, throwing it up on a 90-foot wide screen or whatever the size of screen would be, you know what I mean? There. So that demarcation line is gone. I think this marks the real sea change. The Mandalorian is a series. You know, you go and see a film at the cinema, you see it at the cinema a couple of times if you love it, but the rest of your life you're going to watch it on television. If you watch a television show, you'll never see it on the big screen. But you watch The Mandalorian and you know that they could if they wanted to. If they decided, you know, we're going to do the old, you know, as a tribute to George, we're going to do the old Republic serial thing where you can go and see a major Disney movie, but if you turn up half an hour early, you'll get an episode of The Mandalorian beforehand sort of thing. And they could put it on the screen and people would just watch it and just dribble because it's a movie. These are movies. These are movies made for television. They're not television movies. They are movies that are shown on television. You know what I'm saying. So I think that's the big change. You know, when it comes to season 2, we talked about it last week. You know, they've built these new stagecraft volumes, one at Pinewood, one at Fox Studios in Sydney, another one in LA, that are apparently the next level of stagecraft. They're bigger, the definition's better. It's what we talked about ages ago. It's what Hal Hickel talked about when he was on the show. It's like the tech's only going to get better, so the definition will get better and the room will get bigger and everybody wins because it's incredible. And it's going to start having a very, very positive knock-on effect for the wider industry, maybe not for certain people in certain jobs. I think location scouts might be looking for another job, but generally it's going to give them so many options in a world where there's now multiple platforms, you know, Peacock's out there, Apple's out there, Netflix talk all day about the different avenues for getting content out there. And content is king more than ever because they all want original content. That's what WWE does so well. They're knocking out 8 or 9 hours of original content every week, and people want new content all the time. UK Gold's always going to do well with repeats because certain people want the comfort food of watching stuff they've seen before, but generally advertisers want new stuff. So this completely plays into that. So I think it's almost broader than just, good grief, didn't The Mandalorian look amazing and weren't the effects fantastic? It's almost like if they did a special achievement award at the Emmys, like Ben Burtt won it for Star Wars for the sound, ILM would win it at the Emmys for the visual effects changes, the sea change that's just happened. So I think it's tremendously big. I can imagine season 2 it'll do well, but I can't imagine it winning as many because, you know, it's the same thing again. But then by the next Emmys, maybe, you know, or maybe, no, maybe not the next one, but the one after, maybe you'll be looking at, well, Cassian's been nominated, Kenobi's been nominated, Bad Batch have been nominated. You know, there's different nominations, not just Mando then.
You're listening to Fantatrax. Flip through the galaxy of literature with Cannon Fodder hosts Ryan Cameron, Matt Booker, Mark Newbold, and Mark Mocaster.
Count me in.
Spin round the rim with Desert Planet Discs, your musical journey through the space lanes with your hosts, Carl Bayless and Greg Robertson.
The hottest tunes this side of Mos Eisley.
Hot dang!
Get the latest news, interviews, reviews, and much more on Making Tracks with your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mocaster.
Like an Ewok battle wagon out of control.
Join hosts Claire Henry and a rotating panel of guest hosts for the podcast that's full of hope.
Hope.
Planet Leia.
I love you.
I know.
It's time to head south with the Fantha from Down Under, Adam O'Brien.
Oh, g'day, mate. How you going?
Start your engines with Paul Naylor and Mark Newbold as they lift the hood on starships, airspeeders, swoops, capital ships, and more from across the cosmos. And for everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
Anthony Daniels is back, and this time he is lending his voice to the ILM XLab VR experience Tales from a Galaxy's Edge, which will allow gamers to explore the wonderful world of Batuu and Black Spire Outpost with the interactive experience coming to VR headsets later this year.
I think that's wonderful news. He clearly wasn't done with 3PO when Rise of Skywalker was finished. I think he's done as 3PO getting into the suits. I would not be at all surprised if he never put that metal thing on again, and I don't think he would lose any sleep over that. But being the voice and the heart and soul of 3PO, I think that's got a lot of mileage in it. And this is just sort of the first post-Skywalker saga example of that. Having him in it just validates it. You know, there's other people who've tried to do the voice over the years. You listen to the old book and cassettes, you know, there's some guy doing some weird 3PO version in that. And there's been other bits and bobs, but generally it needs to be him. Not many people, if any, can do a legit 3PO because he's got his own way of speaking and his inflections and his pauses and just everything about it is just so uniquely him, weirdly more than most actors. You can listen to Perry King as Han Solo and buy it, watch Alden Ehrenreich as Han Solo and buy it, even though most people say it's got to be Harrison Ford. It's a bit like Indiana Jones. Doesn't have to always be Harrison Ford. You know, there's been lots of actors have played Indy in major productions. 3PO, you know, and it's not Anthony. And so for this, and also coming into Tales from Galaxy's Edge, you know, the next ILM XLab project, which looks tremendously exciting. And also they've announced that Yoda's going to be in it as well. But they haven't said who the voice actor is. I don't know whether it's Tom Kane or Frank Oz. Have you heard anything?
I haven't, no. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Frank Oz. I mean, if you're going to get Anthony Daniels back, you know, it's possible that we could get Frank Oz back. He's done other Yoda voiceover bits recently, hasn't he? And I guess, again, it's that whole thing, isn't it, of who's asking. Is it directly ILM or is this coming through Disney? And then obviously it's different relationships and, you know, different preferences and stuff. So, but it looks great. Bit like the Vader one, isn't it?
Yeah, kind Vader of, Immortal.
Yeah, experience really is better. It's probably the best term to use, experience rather than game or show or something. It's slated to be released this coming Christmas. Again, it's quite nice, especially for people who were meant to maybe be going to Galaxy's Edge this year but now can't, to actually have a way to be able to explore Black Spire Outpost. Yeah. Albeit only in VR. It's quite a clever little idea that we've put together.
And I think with Yoda as well, Yoda, the voice, there are other voice actors who've done great work with Yoda. Obviously, Tom Kane is the most prevalent one, but, and we've mentioned him already today, Mark Thompson does an absolutely bang-on Yoda. So yeah. So there are other people. But then doing Yoda, it's doing a voice, isn't it? It's an impersonation. There's a beat and a flow to it that can be replicated, but I think just Anthony Daniels' voice is so unique. You know it's him, and nobody I've heard has ever really duplicated that or replicated
no.
that. And just having him involved, right back to the original, back to 75, really, if you think about it, 45 years associated with Star Wars now. So having him in is fantastic. You mentioned Galaxy's Edge. There's more Galaxy's Edge products coming out of the park now that things are still a bit up and down. There's this Galaxy's Edge products going into Downtown Disney in Anaheim, going into Disney Springs at Orlando, and briefly onto shopdisney.com as well. So it's good to see that, like you say, we can't get to Galaxy's Edge. We certainly can't unless we can swim. And then it's a long hike. So you
know, it's a long way. Yeah.
It's a real long way. So we've got no chance at the moment. But even in the States, you know, people aren't traveling around as much, and you know, flights are limited and such. So it's a good idea, isn't it, just to give people a chance to grab a few of these bits?
Yeah, it's nice to be able to have that opportunity to be able to possibly get some of the stuff without necessarily needing to go to the parks and stuff like that, if you can get some stuff, because stuff like this ends up online, doesn't it? I mean, generally, overall, I've been quite impressed with the quality of the merch and stuff that's come out from Galaxy's Edge, even down to the costumes. Some look really good. Others, you know, you squint and you'll be fine. But yeah, it's worrying that when I do end up going there, but if I don't rinse like a whole credit card on it, you know, my girlfriend might have other things to want me to spend money on. But hey, it's very difficult for us to get out there, isn't it, sometimes?
It is. Because we didn't have Celebration. I mean, that would have been a month behind us now, nearly. All these announcements, you know, we've just talked about the trailer and all the other things like this. Because the landscape has changed because of the pandemic, there's a lot of things happening that would have already happened, but they've had to sort of stretch it out a little bit and play around. So it kind of feels like it falls into that a bit, doesn't it?
Like a stopgap, shall we say.
Yeah.
But also, I think it's good because it's good to continue with this ILM X-Lab venture. I only played a little bit of Vader Immortal. I did the Secrets of the Empire.
Yes.
Down in Westfield's shopping centre. That was amazing. But this is kind of where, you know, gaming's headed. The Star Wars Squadrons game's meant to be fully VR if you've got a VR headset. It's great that Star Wars is kind of right up there and push narrative-based experiences as well.
Trials on Tatooine was great fun. I had a little role at that and did a bit of Vader Immortal. Secrets of the Empire was amazing. I was very lucky. I was in the first group of press to do that down at Westfield, so that was great fun. But yeah, more of that stuff, the better. I need to get a VR headset here so I can have a blast at this. And Squadrons, we'll definitely be talking about that. I'm determined we have a Fantha Squadron, so that's got to happen. Totally got to happen.
Well, I don't think we got through all the news this week. I think we might have to pick up and start another episode very soon, but this is basically the end of episode 54. But if you've got any comments, if you've got any speculations on Mandalorian season 2 or any kind of observations about the trailer that we may have missed, how can people get in touch with us, Mark?
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. We had loads to talk about. We didn't get through it all, but we will be back later this week for a second go at it. If you want to be part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit FanthaTracks.com or check out the FanthaTracks app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@FanthaTracks.com. We really do encourage questions and thoughts and criticisms and all sorts of stuff. We even accept money. Comment, like and share on any of our social media feeds @FanthaTracks, and be sure to subscribe, leave a review, please leave a 5-star one, on now Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the FanthaTracks intro, Adam O'Brien for our making tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. So yeah, we've talked about half of the stuff we wanted to talk about. So let's go make a cup of tea and then come back and do it all again.
That sounds good. And if you are going to send money, send it to me and I'll give Mark the 10% that he's owed.
It's always 10%.
Coming up next on FanthaTracks Radio, it's another episode of Making Tracks.